Thanks for listening today to our Conversations That Matter podcast. I'm your host, Dr. John Roebuck, and today we're talking with Dr. Daryl Gwaltney. Daryl is Dean of the College of Theology and Christian Ministry here at Belmont University. So, Daryl, let me say welcome. Glad you're here. Thanks for giving us some time today to talk. If you've been listening at all to some of our podcasts, we're doing work on what it is to be a good leader, and especially in the context of where church and culture sort of intersect. And Daryl has a lot of experience with that. Not only has he been dean here for a dozen or 14 years, how many?
13 years.
13 now.
Yeah.
And also, though, has experience as a pastor, has done interim work, has filled the pulpit for a lot of people in a lot of places. And so I really appreciate his insight and what he will bring to the conversation. So, Daryl, tell us a little bit about yourself first, how long you've been here. Tell us just a bit about your family and that sort of thing.
Thanks, John. Thanks for letting me join the conversation with you. I've been here 13 years. I'm in my 14th year at Belmont now, and I've been in ministry for almost 40 years. I have spent that time either as a pastor or as an educator. Full-time, part-time, always doing some variation of that.
Yeah.
Wife who works in human resources, three children who are now grown and making their place in the world. So it's an exciting time in life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about being a dean. I know there are all kinds of headaches and pressures and problems. So what is it like day to day? Tell me a little bit about just what your day looks like. And it's probably not a typical day, but...
Right. I sometimes tell people that I'm a professional email writer. what I do is write email for a living. Most of my days have a rhythm where the morning, first few hours of the morning, I set aside for planning, for reading when I have a chance to do that. If I'm teaching a class, I work on my class in the morning. Basically, it's generating content in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Some days I have certain meetings I have to go to in the morning that are part of my role as a dean. The afternoons tend to be less at my discretion because I'm meeting with people that need to see me. I'm in meetings with students or other kind of universities.
So talk about that. How many actual professors are under you? How many people are directly accountable to you, reportable to you?
I have one staff person, and I have 19 full-time faculty, and about 30 part-time adjunct faculty.
Yeah, quite a load. And then every student obviously feels like they should be able to get a piece of your time as well.
Yes, and I try to give it to them. We have about 100 students, a little more than 100 students who are majoring in religion, about 50 who are minoring in religion. But then Belmont has more than 5,500 undergraduate students, all who are required to take 6 hours of religion. And so I often speak with many of them as well.
Yeah. So busy life, don't have a lot of downtime in the office just to say, you know, I wonder what I'm going to do today.
That seldom happens, yes.
So tell me, though, in that whole role of managing both professors and class schedules and just the things that come with being in an academic environment, what about it brings you joy and fulfillment? What do you like most about what you do?
Oh, I think the reason I keep coming to work every day is the opportunity I have to create potential for people to be who they want to be, whether that is my students having academic experiences that they're looking for to become the person God calls them to be,
right,
or whether it's helping to make it possible for my faculty to be who they feel like they're supposed to be in their role. So, I mean, that's really it. I mean, the reason I do what I do is I have an opportunity to help people be fulfilled, and I want to try to do that.
So what in your past prepared you for being a dean?
Oh, that's a great question.
Yeah,
I think it is watching good leaders, trying to learn from people who were willing to help other people first.
And obviously, you applied for the position here. What was it that just said in your mind, this is what I want to do, here's where I want to invest the next 15, 20 years of my life?
Well, over a couple of years, before I came to Belmont, I had been working in another institution, and doing increasingly more administrative work, and found comfort and reward in that. And when this opportunity came up, I knew Belmont was a growing school, good school, and so I applied to get me closer to home.
Yeah.
And at the time, I had no way of imagining how great an experience it would be to be here.
Again, if you're just catching up on our podcast, I'm talking with Dr. Daryl Gwaltney, Dean here at Belmont University of the School of Theology and Christian Ministry. Let's kind of turn the conversation to leadership in terms of some questions that I have run by a number of people both on and off campus. And the first question I want to run by is, what are the traits and habits, the abilities that you see are essential in becoming a good leader? What are the you know, if you're making a bullet point list, two or three things, what are the big things?
Well, I think that one of the things that a person needs to have if they're going to be a leader is the ability to be patient,
okay.
To be willing to listen, but I think as well to be willing to articulate a vision. And lots of things are important, like honesty and integrity and consistency.
Sure.
Those things are there. But I think that a willingness to accept that you can't control everything, that you're working with other people who may see things differently than you. You may not have the resources that you would like to have. You may not be allowed to have the resources
sure.
you'd like to have.
Yeah.
But still, you try to find a way working with people patiently, consistently, to achieve a vision that you see that will help the whole organization, the whole group move forward.
You know, one interesting thing you said, the second thing you listed, you said patience, and then you said the ability to listen. And doing a lot of reading in leadership literature over the spring, especially when I was teaching class for you on servant leadership, over and over again that popped up, that ability to be a good listener. And I don't know that I would have thought about that ahead of time, but certainly to be able to hear and reflect on what people are saying to you, both positively and negatively, but also just to learn from others and have that attitude that you don't ever get to a point where you know it all, but you got to learn from others.
Right. One of the key leadership lessons I learned over time was that I may not know everything that I think I know. And the best way to learn that and the best way to overcome it is to be willing to listen to people. And so I ask questions, and I'm honestly looking for answers.
Yeah.
And there are some of the best things that I've been able to be a part of were not my idea. They were an idea that someone else shared with me
right.
that we were able to work together on achieving.
So pare all that list down for a minute and give me what you see as the single most important characteristic that a leader should possess.
The ability to see the horizon.
Okay, and flesh that out for me.
Well, I think to not be overcome by the mundane tasks of everyday work, of writing all the emails I have to write,
sure.
all the reports, but to recognize that those are parts of the day-to-day activity that you have to do. But a leader looks at everything that you're experiencing, looks at, in this case, the university, perhaps the church, and says, can look forward to a horizon and say, we can get there.
Yeah.
And to see that. And to imagine that. And then the leadership becomes managing the emails and the tasks and the programs to get there. But I think if a leader doesn't have the ability to see the horizon and say, we can go there, then you'll be caught up in the day-to-day
sure.
events.
So one of the things that I know you've discovered, and I did as well when I served in the pastorate for a number of years, time management becomes such an important part of that. Any tricks, time management tricks? How do you balance it all? Have you found ways that are more helpful than others?
I say no to people.
Okay.
I've increasingly have made decisions that I don't have time to speak to all the people that need to speak to me or want to speak to me.
Right.
And that's not that I'm important. It's just that I have a lot of things I have to do, and there are only a certain number of hours in a day. So I prioritize.
Mm-hmm.
I prioritize interactions and where I spend my time. I try to make sure that I think of my time in 15-minute blocks, not in half-hour or 30-minute or hour blocks. And so I use time that way. I set a schedule for myself during the week where I don't allow meetings to a certain time.
Sure. So come back for a minute. Let me just interrupt you for a second. On the thinking of your life in 15-minute increments, I think in my scheduling of my life and stuff, I kind of go hour to hour, you know. So what am I going to try to get done in this hour? Why does 15 minutes work for you? And does that mean, like, if somebody scheduled a time, you want to be in and out of that in 15 minutes?
Sometimes. I mean, there are some meetings that if I allow the meeting to go 30 minutes, it will.
Sure.
But it may not need to be more than 15 minutes. If I'm meeting with a student, or even perhaps the faculty member or someone else about a simple issue, it may be a 15-minute conversation. But it's also about me saying, I'm going to do email for 15 minutes.
Right.
And then I'm going to go work on this planning thing, or I'm going to read this, or I'm going to do this research for 30 minutes. Otherwise, I can sit down and do email for 45 minutes or an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And the email is good to get finished, but then I've done an hour and a half of email. I haven't done the other things I need to do. So that kind of helps me to be aware of how I'm using my time.
Yeah. Man, I still have to go with the old-fashioned. I have a to-do list, you know,
right.
And I start it Monday morning, and I know what day I'm going to accomplish which thing
right.
on the list.
I have a to-do list as well.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about, in terms of leadership, most of us stand on the shoulders of somebody who led us or taught us or who mentored us. Do you have a person that has had an impact on you as a leader? Who's the key person or persons?
I don't know that I can – I would say a specific name. It's been for me more like the person who was influential at a certain period in my life.
Right.
So in key seasons of my life, when I was moving from college into my graduate school, there was an individual who invested himself in me. When I was in my first pastorate, there were a couple of individuals who showed me what it meant to be a leader, who held me accountable, et cetera. Each period of my life, I tended to have somebody. I sought out people who were wiser, older, more experienced than me, and asked them to be candid with me about what I was doing.
Yeah.
And so I have five or six individuals. They're not people anybody else would know, but they're people who were successful in their lives and invested in me and helped me to grow into the person I am today.
Our mutual friend, Bill Wilson, gave me a quote recently. He said, the first 50 years of your life are all preparation for what you're really supposed to be doing, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that there are seasons, like you described, that we go through. So obviously, you are at a point in your life where you are seasoned, to
yes,
use that
I am.
Word.
Yes, increasingly so.
And have had a lot of experiences. And so I'm just curious about what do you continue to do to build leadership skills in your own life? What do you do to continue to educate yourself? How do you continue to make yourself better?
Mm-hmm. Well, I work on it. I continue to work on training and developing skills I have in the work I do as an intentional interim, as a pastor, as a preacher. I've recently been certified as an executive coach. I've been certified as a consultant for a church. These are all things I'm learning more tools, learning more skills, being involved in dialogue with the people who are involved with more training than I have. I'm trying to gain speed with
sure.
them. And teaching, I'm a dean. I could spend my whole day writing emails, as I said, but I've recently decided to teach more. And so I'm teaching two classes this fall. I'm teaching one on the history and theology of marriage in a graduate program on counseling. I'm teaching another class on the end of the world as we have known it, about post-apocalyptic literature, doing that with our honors students. Two very different classes, two very different student populations. And I'm doing that to enrich the life of my mind and to help me give back to students and think about important issues.
Tell me about the kind of reading you do.
I read fiction.
Mm-hmm.
I read theology and books about theology, about religion.
Sounds very pious, by the way.
Yeah. It's part of my job. It's like work for me.
Sure.
And I read biographies and books on leadership development. Yeah.
So tell me, as a leader, how do you, in a continuing way, continue to communicate core values of what the school is trying to do, what it's trying to accomplish? How do you continue to communicate that to the 19 full-time faculty, I think you said, and the 30 or 40 some odd adjuncts? How do
right.
you communicate that to them?
I think I regularly remind them of those values. I look for ways, if we're going to focus on the importance of the teaching environment in the classroom, then I will bring that up often in meetings. I will ask them how they're doing about it. I will look for chances to bring it up in one-on-one conversations. I often let them choose what the important issues are. I don't often try to tell them. We have a set of things that we work on, and I will often say, what are the things that are most important to you now? And then I work on trying to do
yep.
that. One of the initiatives I have now is that we are changing our Blackboard learning environment here, our
right.
online learning environment. And so one of the things I'll be doing a lot over the next 3 or 4 months is helping to keep before the faculty the changes in Blackboard and the way that that can help their any way that they use online teaching environments. And so that will be, that's a value that we have on pedagogy. It's also a value we have on trying to be innovative in our teaching. So I'll remind them of this new tool that we have, this enhanced tool, and try to do everything I can to equip them to use it.
How often do you meet one-on-one with faculty? Is there a regularly scheduled, college-wide meeting that you hold with faculty?
How does College of Theology faculty meet twice a month for an hour, usually the first and the second Monday. I meet with faculty one-on-one on an as-needed basis.
Sure.
Tips tends to be situational. They have something they need to, me to help them with, or I need something to have them do something. So those aren't regularly scheduled meetings.
And they feel pretty, they feel the freedom to come to you pretty often and as they need to, and kind of an open door policy that you're ready, willing, and able and want to.
Yeah, I hope they would.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's move out of local for a minute and think a little more globally about the intersection of faith and culture. And the question I have for you is, what do you see are the big challenges that leaders are facing in modern-day American life and the different cultural influences that are going on right now?
Leaders in general or leaders in the church?
Well, really, faith-based leaders.
Faith-based leaders, yeah. I think the big challenge is to not let someone else define the narrative. We here in faith-based leadership, in the Christian community, I've said a lot over the last 20 years, we either believe the gospel is powerful and effective to salvation, or we don't.
Right.
And so we either live as if we believe it, or we don't. And I think there are people outside of the church who try to build a narrative that essentially says the gospel is no longer powerful and effective.
Right.
And so I think what's important for us as leaders in faith-based institutions is to have confidence in the life-changing power of the gospel. And what I mean by that is I'm not saying the preaching so much. I mean that there's great power in grace. There's incredible power in love. Yeah. There's incredible power in forgiveness. And so that we as leaders in faith-based institutions need to confidently live into grace and love and forgiveness in those three things, for example, and believe that it can affect change.
Yeah, I mean, I think I wholeheartedly agree with that. There has to be an authenticity about who we are.
Right.
I do think the Christian faith has marvelous answers, but I think sometimes our actions kind of belie our best values, and we somehow create such an aura about us and maybe a judgmental sort of push people away kind of spirit that we don't allow the gospel to build a bridge
I understand that. I say to folks is that there's a lot of conversation about people not attending church. Everywhere you look, attendance is down. I don't blame those people. I don't say, well, they need to be more spiritual or more holy or
right.
more godly. I instead say perhaps we've not been very effective communicating grace and love and forgiveness in this case.
Yeah.
And I do think that our judgmental attitude, I think our bureaucracy, our procedures sometimes chase people away. And ultimately, I think the gospel is powerful and effective. And we see that happening. And the church reinvents itself. And faith-based leaders reinvent themselves. And so I have great confidence in that. And so I don't want someone else to tell me what I can do or believe.
Yeah.
I want to believe that the gospel inherently has a power to change the world in which I live. And I want to try to be a part of that and discover what that means to me, to see that horizon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So time is about gone.
Sure.
Not to pull a trick question on you, but just off the top of your head, if you had to boil down the whole Christian experience to just a moment, what it has been for you the most impactful portion of Scripture? What if you got a favorite verse, you got a life verse, you got a chapter that just calls you to it from time to time? What do you?
Oh, that's a great question. A lot of places are fun for me.
Yep.
Luke 9:23, fun in the sense of that they call me always to new levels of obedience. If anyone wishes to follow me, deny himself.
Yeah.
take up his cross and follow me. That's powerful. Paul's message about grace in Galatians is transformative. But I think the single most powerful verse is Galatians 5:1, is for freedom Christ has set us free. To be reminded of that Christ did not come to enslave.
Yeah.
He came to set us free. And anything that I do that enslaves people likely is not graceful.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
It's been good today to have Dr. Daryl Gwaltney, Dean of the College of Theology and Christian Ministry here at Belmont University, as our guest. And if you happen upon this podcast and you ever want to know more about Daryl and his work or just want to get to know him, he'll give you at least 15 minutes of his time, I'm sure. But he's been a great friend to me and a great leader on campus, and I appreciate your time this afternoon, Daryl. Thanks for being with us on Conversations That Matter.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.